This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight we have Barbara.
Hello.
Sarah.
Hello.
Damien.
Hi.
And myself. It's great to have you back, by the way, Barbara.
Oh, yeah, just a surprise stint at Worldwide Wave.
We managed to get you away from Three Chords and the Truth for a change.
A cameo appearance.
That's it.
You are just irresistible.
Oh, what can I say? We know that for sure, but it's always good to hear it. So, now, following on from the recent LGBTI Asia Pacific Youth Forum in Sydney, hosted by our friends Kaleidoscope Australia, we're profiling the LGBTI rights and life in some of our Pacific neighbours. And after hearing about Kiribati last week, we're off to another Pacific island tonight, the Cook Islands. To cruise around the gay rights of the Cook Islands, tonight we speak with Tatiana Eden Lacroix from Tia Association, I hope I pronounced that correctly, a support and human rights association for trans women in the Cook Islands. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
While I was sitting in one of the conferences, I had a moment and I emailed our secretary and I was like, look, I'm awed. I'm powered up right now and I just want to like get these wheels in motion because I feel like I'm in the right place and I'm around the right people who I think that can help us make these positive changes.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
News this week were made in several places, and we're starting off with Indonesia, where a university has introduced a very interesting program. So the State University of Gorontalo, UNG, in the northern Indonesia, has initiated a new program allegedly designed to normalize LGBTI students. Sayamzu Kama Badu, the rector of that university, has announced that a special team will be employed to identify LGBTI students on campus and offer them counselling services.
Identify? Such a sinister word, isn't it?
Yeah, and offering them counselling services.
Fix them. We will seek you out and then we will fix you.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
We will have a special team to seek you out. I imagine undercover kind of Gestapo style.
Yeah, but they do recognise that it might not be easy, but we can't just let it happen if there are male students wearing, and here it is, lipstick on campus.
Gasp.
Yeah, that's really worrying.
Well, Badu hopes the program will create a college of civilization and that the new guidance will help bring LGBTI people back to normalcy.
Which is quite interesting because apparently homosexuality has never been illegal in Indonesia. But if you've been listening to Worldwide Wave this year, you'll know that attitudes towards the LGBTI people have become steadily more extreme in recent years. And partly because the Indonesia Psychiatric Association still classifies homosexuality as an illness.
And they don't like lipstick either.
No.
Now over to Morocco, which also has a pretty interesting story that a lot of people have been commenting on. Two teenage girls have been arrested in Morocco for kissing and hugging, and they face up to 3 years in prison under the country's strict homosexuality laws, with their trial is due to start next week. Now, it's a really interesting story of how they even were caught, because it suggests that the 16-year-old Sana invited her 17-year-old friend Hajar, who's homeless, into her house in Marrakesh, where they kissed and were secretly being filmed by Sana's cousin, who quickly told her mother. It's like the ultimate tattletale or whatever.
Escándalo. It gets even juicier. It's like a soapy, isn't it? Because the mother then reported the pair to the police and they subsequently arrested the lovers. And if found guilty, they face between 6 months and 3 years in prison.
Yeah, thanks, Mum.
Yeah. So unlike Indonesia, Morocco really does have a law that penalises acts of sexual deviancy between members of the same sex, a term that police reports and court documents use to refer to homosexuality. And although many men have been arrested and imprisoned under this law, we think this is the first case of female minors being prosecuted in Morocco.
A dubious precedent.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because, yeah, usually you never hear of women really getting into trouble, even though there might be laws criminalising homosexuality, but they're kind of always just imposed on males and females sort of... almost as if nobody bothers, really. So
there you go, we've got equality in Morocco, just not the kind of equality we're after.
No.
Earlier this year, two Moroccan men were arrested after a video of them kissing caused outrage online. And in February, two male youths were jailed for 1.5 years after they were caught kissing each other. And last year, campaigners condemned the jailing of two men accused of consensual same-sex activity. So you can see a pattern developing there. Mm. So, let's hope that doesn't continue. Now, moving on to Russia. Russian health officials say 1 in 50 people in the country's fourth largest city is carrying the HIV virus because the country is struggling to deal with a rapidly rising number of infections. The regional deputy health minister says the central Russian city of Yekaterinburg suffers from this epidemic. The city of 1.5 million people has 27,000 residents, or 1.8% of the population carrying the virus. The rate of new HIV infections is increasing in Russia, which bans some preventative measures common in other parts of the world, such as methadone therapy for intravenous drug users. We've also talked in the past about how Russia, because of their anti-gay propaganda law, makes it very difficult for people to seek out treatment.
Yeah, absolutely. And also their anti-drug laws, which are huge. And across the whole of Eastern Europe, it's actually injecting drug users, which are really driving the new HIV infections.
Well, in Russia, there's about 800,000 people living with HIV that are registered, and 100,000 new cases were reported last year, so it's skyrocketing.
Wow.
Now, experts and government officials say that in the country, because awareness is very low and diagnostic testing is irregular, the actual number of people infected is more likely to be about 1.5 million. And at the current rate, some Russian officials expect the number of infections to double every 5 years. We will keep you posted on this as further developments come to hand. In brief, a Native American transgender teenager has been voted prom queen at her high school in Spring Lake, North Carolina.
Yay! And Uganda's foreign minister has blamed the country's anti-LGBTI laws on British colonialism.
And a British bank is to become the first to welcome customers who do not identify as male or female by adding a non-binary gender option in its account application form, along with the title MX rather than Mr. or Mrs. Miss.
And so on.
Those.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
I am Bisi Alimi from Nigeria. For those who say homosexuality is a Western import to Africa, I am a proof that you can be proudly African and gay and fabulous. And I'm on Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
We're talking about the Cook Islands tonight. Cook Islands is a self-governing island country in the South Pacific Ocean in free association with New Zealand. It comprises 15 islands. The Cook Islands Exclusive Economic Zone, however, covers 1,800,000 square kilometres of ocean.
I don't even understand what that means. That's insane.
Isn't it selling to a lot of fish?
It is huge. You fly over water for a very long time until you get there.
And if you're from the Cook Islands, while you're flying over it, you go, that's ours. That's ours too. It's all ours. Yeah. It's amazing.
The Cook Islands Defence and Foreign Affairs are the responsibility of New Zealand, but they are exercised in consultation with the Cook Islands, so at least they get asked before somebody invades on their behalf. In recent times, the Cook Islands have adopted an increasingly independent foreign policy. Although Cook Islanders are citizens of New Zealand, they have the status of Cook Island nationals, which is not given to other New Zealand citizens. So it's a one-way.
Yeah, it's also why some of their laws are more progressive and some are less progressive, like that in association with New Zealand. Now, tonight we're talking to the Te Tiara Association, And they focus on Akavin. It's a Cook Islands Maori word, which has come more recently since the 2000s to refer to transgender people of Maori descent from the Cook Islands. It's not an old custom, like we think of the Fafafin in Samoa. It's rather a contemporary identity, almost solely influenced by other Polynesians. The usage of this Maori word, Akavin, for a transgender person seems to be recent, as no evidence of it as an established gender role in Cook Islands Maori society is not documented in various accounts written in the 18 and 1900s, unlike the transgender people in Samoa, the Fafafin, and the Tahitian and Hawaii Mahu.
So LGBTI people are just great in the Cook Islands and they love us and they don't have any problems with us?
It's not quite that simple.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. The Cook Islands Christian Church is the largest religion and more than half the population claim an affiliation to it. And unfortunately, they believe that homosexuality and cross-dressing, as they call it, are signs of immorality, and this impacts both public attitudes as well as the government's policy. So the Cook Islands LGBTI community does feel the need to be somewhat discreet.
But on the positive side of things, the Cook Islands Democratic Party MP, who is totally against marriage equality, does say, for me, and I think a lot of us in the Cook Islands, we've already accepted them in society as they are. So they're saying they don't have a problem. And similarly, the chairman of the Religious Advisory Council says homosexuality has always been the norm and there is relatively little conflict between people of various sexualities.
However, that said, she also says they will not support same-sex marriage and any amendment to decriminalise homosexuality would have to be clearly worded. So, I don't know, it sounds like a bit of foot on each camp kind of thing.
Yep.
Joy.
Following on from the recent LGBTI Pacific Youth Forum, which was hosted by Kaleidoscope Australia in Sydney, tonight we profile another one of the countries that attended, which is the Cook Islands in the South Pacific. As we heard before, homosexuality is illegal in the Cook Islands, and we spoke to Tatriana Eden-Lacroix, who explains what the TTR Association does and how life is in general for an LGBTI person in the Cook Islands.
Perhaps that's where we start. Tell us a bit about Tetiare Association and what you do for the LGBT community in Cook Islands.
Tetiare launched itself in 2008, so it's been going for like 8 years now. And since its launch, it's been promoting mainly health awareness, like safe sex and awareness around HIV and AIDS for the LGBT communities. But recently, it took a step into trying to change some laws, particularly the decriminalization of homosexuality in the Cook Islands. As part of its campaign, it also ran a pageant, which is the first of its kind in like 10 years, to help promote and, you know, start normalizing the conversation between amongst the communities about LGBT issues and about how we were going to go about to decriminalize this law that's currently hovering against our community, I guess.
I'll come back to the law. Just paint us a bit of a picture of what life is like for an LGBT person in Cook Islands.
It's kind of cruisy. Like, you know, it's not as, I guess, in a sense, it's not as shunned as some other people may describe in their own communities. Like, it's generally acceptable to be an LGBT person, like myself. Growing up, it's been safe, and I'm pretty comfortable, and I know that my friends are pretty comfortable. However, when issues of, like, maybe same-sex marriage and stuff start arising, that's when people start to have a little problem about being LGBT. In the Cook Islands, like, in the homes, it's generally accepted, and nobody really has a problem with it unless there is some awareness around it.
Does that mean you need to be discreet in your life?
Yes, I think so. So I think in your sexual life, you definitely have to be discreet, and that's definitely an aspect of our lives that we do not show out. So we do not show public affection for one another because it's not generally acceptable. But we're accepted out in the communities when we're like helping out and creating events and stuff like that and designing costumes and all that stuff. But to be LGBTI in partnership with someone else and showing affection publicly, that's not generally acceptable, and you kind of have to keep it discreet.
That was Tatriana from the Tetiare Association giving an overview about what the Tetiare Association does and how life is in general for an LGBTI person in the Cook Islands.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a worldwide wave.
And you are listening indeed to Worldwide Wave. And family and their support is very important to many of us. And in the next part of the interview that we had with Tatiana from the Te Tiara Association in the Cook Islands, she talks about her relationship with her family and how the LGBTI community connects across the different islands, which is not that easy because they're really far apart. She also talks about the incredible political work that the Te Tiara Association does to push for the decriminalisation of homosexuality and why it is so difficult.
Tell us a bit about family and I guess the role that family plays in Cook Islands culture and how that might impact LGBT people, you know, with, say, things like coming out.
Well, family is really important if you're LGBT growing up in Cook Islands because it's such a small community that if you don't have your family, you really don't have the support system, because if you step away from your family is bound to know the person that you're going to step away from and could influence other people's views on you. So a lot of the time we're trying to please our families and keep them happy, and it is your family who will kind of like give you that strong support system if you decide to come out, because being such a small community, you're easily targeted, I guess, if you don't have your family around. For me, it was really important that I had my family with me, coming out, my mom, my sisters, because then if my family accepted me and outside communities saw that, then they probably wouldn't have a problem with it. But if my family didn't accept me and then I went out and, you know, became who I wanted to be, the community would look at me and be like, oh, well, she's not really a good person because she left her family and is disobedient, rebellious and all of that other stuff.
Sort of like social exclusion in the community.
Yes.
You said there it is a small community. Not only that, it's split across multiple islands. How do you build a sense of LGBT community when you've got a small population but also a split across different islands?
I'm not quite sure about Rarotonga, the main island, is where everything happens. I know that out in the outer islands, there are like smaller communities and the visibility there is not as strong. But I do know that being LGBT in the smaller islands is, it's not okay, but there's not so much problems that community have against those individuals that live there. And but creating a voice that, you know, a collective voice is a little bit harder because in some islands they're comfortable with who they are and, you know, their daily lives, that they probably won't get on board and get change wagon because in their community, in their island where they come from, they're okay, they're comfortable and they like it, they're safe.
You mentioned that Te Tiara Association is working on the decriminalisation of homosexuality, working in the advocacy space, I guess you'd call it. Tell us a bit about what you're doing and where that's up to.
The bill has actually been waiting to be read in Parliament. We have a secretary, our secretary, Valentina Witchman, who is at the forefront of trying to push for this reading to happen. But at the moment, we haven't found a suitable candidate.
Is that like a suitable politician to raise it?
Yes, a suitable politician to raise it.
Do you have any allies in the parliament that are interested in LGBT issues?
Yes, we do. We have one of our patrons, Nandy Glassy, who is the Minister of Health in Parliament, and he, I guess at this point, is just wanting a little bit more information from us. He just wants maybe like a stronger case put forward from our organisation, and that's what we're trying to work on at the moment. So it's there, and then so his advice back to us is that to bring forward a more convincing case for other members of Parliament, because it is a touchy issue and there's a huge confusion between decriminalising and same-sex marriage within our communities and our political leaders. It's this inevitability that same-sex marriage will follow on from this decriminalisation, which isn't the case, and that's what we have to work on at the moment. And that's what I hope will happen as a result of the forum that I just attended, the Kaleidoscope one. So that's where things are at for the bill. It started like around 2 years ago, and there was some talk around it from the communities and from political members and individuals, but nothing major has happened yet apart from the raising awareness, the writing of the drafting of the bill and having it read and proposed through Parliament at this point.
Cook Islands has quite close relationships with New Zealand, and New Zealand has been quite progressive in LGBT rights and have now voted through same-sex marriage. Does that have any influence on Cook Islands, either positive or negative?
I think it's, in regards to the same-sex marriage bill for New Zealand, it definitely had a negative feedback from community because of the strong religious standing that the Cook Islands upholds itself on. So I think that's why there's this huge confusion when we first proposed to decriminalize, because people, communities, whoever, were like, oh, no, we don't accept same-sex marriage. However, that's not the case. And speaking of New Zealand's involvement and its obligation to, like, help the smaller islands, particularly the Cook Islands, because, you know, we're such a small organization and it's such a small country, I guess we haven't received any huge support from New Zealand yet.
That's Tatriana from the Te Tia Association in the Cook Islands on the political work they do in regards to the decriminalisation of homosexuality.
Now, I would think that Tatriana brought up some really interesting issues there. And I thought it was funny, in a not very funny way, that the Minister of Health wanted a stronger case for decriminalisation other than it should just be decriminalised. I guess to us it seems very normal that that should not be a criminal act, whereas other people are worried that decriminalization means marriage equality.
Yeah, I find that confusion quite interesting, that there's a lot of water between those two terms.
But then it means it's really great kind of news that for the world, marriage equality is pushing ahead so much that people think that's what it means.
Yeah, but I thought it was quite weird that talking about New Zealand and how progressive New Zealand is, and we would, or in Australia here, the perception is always like, oh, look at the Kiwis, they can do it, we can do it. But there, the opposite happened, like, because religion plays such a big role in the Cook Islands, they were like, oh, if we... like, if New Zealand gets same-sex marriage, that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing, and we don't want it. And so they're pushing even harder.
So you think they've dug their heels in further?
Yeah, it almost sounds like it, that made it worse, which is kind of really weird.
Because you've been to the Cook Islands, haven't you, Barbara?
I have, as a tourist. I've been to Rarotonga, the main island.
Where everything happens, apparently.
Yes, where the parliament is. It's an interesting place. It's very beautiful. But I went with my girlfriend, and we sort of did a bit of research, and we did find out that it was illegal, like for male, but okay for girls. But still, the sort of recommendation was no affection in public,
no PDA.
Which was fine, you know. But yeah, it's a funny little place.
So you didn't encounter anything negative, but that's because you also didn't demonstrate anything either.
But I do remember that I was surprised about the number of churches, the huge number of churches for such a small island. There was like every couple of meters, there was another church. And it was, not the kind of sort of progressive ones. There was a lot of like Seventh-day Adventist churches as well, and I think they're not very pro-LGBTI either.
Mm.
So really it's the same old story. It's the churches holding the sway, and you know, regardless of whether you're on a island or not, if religion's there, it's going to be an obstacle.
So going back to what Sarah was saying about decriminalisation, my thought whenever this comes up, because we've had other countries that we've spoken about and where we've communicated with people and they say it's the same situation, it's illegal, you know, the decriminalisation is something they're aiming for. I always think to myself, well, if there's this opposition to decriminalisation, how many people are currently in prison as a result of homosexuality? And in a country like Morocco that we spoke about earlier in the show, there's actually a number of people that are in there for same-sex activity. But in a country like the Cook Islands, I'd be curious to know how many people have gone through the court system and are currently
incarcerated. Are they actually using the laws?
Exactly. Are there people currently incarcerated for same-sex activity? And if it's one of those countries where no one is currently incarcerated and the police would in fact be embarrassed to have to arrest someone and put them through the legal system for, you know, you were kissing a man or whatever the situation is, then why not decriminalise it? It's obviously a pointless law that's just there in many respects, again, to tie it into the religious groups that you just mentioned then, Damien. It's just there to placate religious people. And in many respects, that's not a reason for a law to exist.
No.
And I, to be honest, I doubt that there's people in prison there for homosexual acts. I doubt it.
Especially when the population sounds reasonably small. I mean, there's quite a few people. But when Tatiana was talking about, she knows about what's happening on Rarotonga, and then saying, well, people on the smaller islands, that must be a way smaller population.
Yeah, and I find that really interesting as well. You would think that the smaller the community, the worse it is. But she says it's actually easier for them because it's just more accepted and there's no big fuss about it and people can just, they're obviously taken for the person they are and not so much judged by labels.
It's correct to say that they're not arresting people left, right and centre and throwing them in prison like they are in Morocco, simply because, like I was saying earlier in the show, Tatiana, go to the website for the organisation and it's just glamour shot after glamour shot. It just seems to be cocktails and fabulous outfits 24/7. These are not shy ladies, that's for sure. So they're very out and proud, and that doesn't indicate to me that it's a culture where, you know, the love that dare not speak its name. So, yeah, I think that in terms of decriminalisation, it's interesting to think what's standing in the way of that.
Mm. Also, I thought it was interesting that family has such a high priority. It you could really tell that, like, if your family, if you sort of break up with your family, that's you can't do that because you lose your identity. And I think a lot of people have issues with their family, but I think in our Western society, we're sort of much happier to then say, well, okay, then that's it. We can't obviously be family anymore.
We're more independent in that way. Like, the family unit is not so strong compared to there, which, you know, that can work in the favour of the LGBTIQ community because really you only need your family to accept you and then you're good.
Yeah.
Well, you're listening to Worldwide Wave, where we're in the Cook Islands. Coming up, we're talking to Tatiana about her experience at the LGBT Youth Forum in Sydney.
And in case you're wondering, we're not actually in the Cook Islands. We're in Melbourne, but we are visiting, metaphorically speaking, the Cook Islands on Worldwide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Effie from Pewa, Kenya. We are supporting gender and sexual minorities in Africa on the World Wide Web.
Our wonderful guest is Tatiana from the Te Tiare Association, and she recently attended the Pacific LGBT Youth Forum in Sydney, organised by Kaleidoscope Australia, and we asked Tatiana about her experience and what she took away from the forum.
Actually, the forum was really amazing. I really enjoyed it. For me, all I wanted to get out of the forum is anything that was related or that I could relate in a Pacific context. Because our organization was quite small, and when I was sitting in the conference and listening to all these other things, there was a lot of organizations that I've heard stories from have grown so vastly that I'm just like, oh, wow, we're kind of at the, not infant stages, but we're kind of at the young stages of our organization. And we haven't really made like any huge impact on LGBT changes in our community. So sitting in the conference, it was very important for me to listen to the stories from other Pacific nations. And also, it was really important that I knew how our country could benefit from the assistance that was available, like the, is it Global Fund? I definitely drew on some experiences from Samoa because they recently just decriminalized the homosexual laws in their country. Also from Fiji because they have so many organizations. And then there's, of course, Australia with their vast experiences and expertise and skills and, you know, qualities. Networking was really important. And I think coming out of the conference, I did, you know, make some connections and stuff that I know that would definitely benefit. And particularly there's some funding available, which we could help with the desensitizing workshops that we need to run in our communities while we're going through the process of decriminalizing in our country.
Did you leave with a good dose of inspiration to take this challenge forward in Cook Island?
Oh my gosh, I did. I absolutely did. While I was sitting in one of the conferences, I had a moment and I emailed our secretary. So our secretary for our organization just received a Queen's Youth Award for her work around pushing for decriminalizing. She just received it this year. So I was inspired by her, and then I emailed her and I said to her, I was like, look, you know, I'm sitting at this conference and it's just, there's so much information, valuable information that I'm just like, I'm awed. And so I sent her an email and I was like, look, I'm powered up right now and I just want to like get these wheels in motion because I feel like I'm in the right place and I'm around the right people who I think that can help us make these positive changes. I do feel that the conference has definitely motivated and inspired because like everyone in the conference is so positive and it's just really good to be around them.
Fantastic. We look forward to some good news out of the Cook Islands in the near future.
Thank you so much.
Tatriana from Te Tiare Association in Cook Islands, thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Oh, thank you so much.
What a wonderful guest she was. So bubbly and so bright and so knowledgeable.
Wonderful.
I know. It's fantastic. What's also wonderful is we mentioned this a couple of months ago. It was announced in July, but Worldwide Wave is a finalist in one of the categories at this year's Community Broadcasting Association of Australia Awards.
Woo-hoo.
Now, this is a proper awards ceremony with like actual, you know, awards given out that are quite attractive. We've got a few in the Joy Trophy Cabinet here. We were the only show to get into the nominations, to be nominated this year, which is mainly because there are about 220 community radio stations in Australia, so it's a pretty crowded field. We are in a field of four. So, in the category of Excellence in Spoken Word, News and Current Affairs Programming, the award ceremony is this Saturday, so we'll be able to tell you next week if we were a lucky winner, like Leonardo DiCaprio this year, or just a nominee like Leonardo DiCaprio every other year. So, yeah, that's coming up.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week, like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, it's Todd Sears, founder of Out Leadership, and excited to be discussing driving LGBTI inclusion on the Worldwide Wave.
And we would like to thank Tatriana from the Te Tiare Association in the Cook Islands for our interview this week. And you can read more about the LGBTI Pacific Youth Forum at www.kaleidoscopeaustralia.com.
And a big thank you to everyone who interacted with us on our Facebook page. That's W3Joy on Facebook. And thank you to our podcaster, Mark, and the lovely Gordon at the front counter. Next week, we're going to be talking to Angus about the ILGA report on LGBTI rights in about 65 countries. It's amazing. So, yeah, that's going to be our next week's show.
Welcome to the jungle.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
It's all about the body. Tonight's the night. Get up, and
connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.